Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, yesterday I reported at johncanzano.com that the Pac-12, the New World Pac-12 athletic directors were meeting in San Ramon, California, and I gave details on their meeting and the fact that, you know, I mentioned UNLV and Nevada as possible targets in expansion. I still think those schools are on the table, as well as Memphis and Tulane, or maybe even some combination of two or three or four of those. Today, the Mountain West Conference issued a statement from Commissioner Gloria Navarez, and it's titled Membership Realignment Update. I read through it. There's nothing new in it, but the conference is basically doubling down and reiterating that the Mountain West has seven members who have fully committed to the future of the conference and have cemented that commitment by executing a grant of rights that becomes effective on July 1, 2026. Also, she goes on to write that their priority is to protect the member institutions and that they feel good about the ongoing litigation between the Pac-12 and the departing schools, and there's nothing in it. It came off to me, it smacked to me of a little bit insecure. I definitely think it was aimed at some of my reporting, maybe John Wilner as well. He has reported recently about UNLV, Nevada, possibly being expansion targets, but Mountain West Conference playing a little bit of defense there. Here to talk about that and a whole bunch of other things, Ian Furness, KJR Radio, and a guy who knows the Portland market in the Pacific Northwest better than anybody, joining us. What'd you make of that Mountain West statement when that came out? What was your reaction?
Well, first thing I did, I said I better check in with my guy Canzano and see what he thinks, which I did. I thought it was odd in the sense that, you know, like, okay, if you have these things, like, nothing, you're right. When you first read it and I first saw it, I said, whoa, what the hell? They just doubled down. They locked in UNLV and Nevada and anybody else. And then you kind of read it, and it's like, no, because it doesn't kick in until, what is it, June 30th or whatever, July 26th to 2026. So, which does leave, I believe, that window open for those schools to leave at that time, right? Like, right. That's when they get locked in until 2032. So, you know, once you read it through, yeah, okay, so why are we sending this out? And, you know, like, it's funny, John, I was a fan of Gloria Navarez for a while. And then, you know, I got word from people in Pullman and people like you and Wilner and others, kind of what she was up to. And, I mean, her job is to protect the Mountain West, but she really did a good job of really kind of doing whatever she could to make life really challenging for Washington State and Oregon State. And so I'm just not a fan. Like, the scheduling nonsense that she pulled off, and I think that's really kind of what spurred, you know, Oregon State and Washington State to really kind of get aggressive and going out and getting these guys. So, and the other schools. But yeah, I think it's exactly what you said. The more I looked at it, the closer I looked at it, we're putting words out there just for fun. You know, yeah. we're getting lots of words that mean really nothing.
It reminded me of George Kliavkov, who did a very similar thing prior to the Pac-12 eventually imploding. They sent out a tweet with the Pac-12 Twitter account with a statement saying, you know, all of our schools are fully committed and we're negotiating. And I'm like, nothing has changed. I was looking for what's changed here. Okay, nothing's changed here. We're still spinning in a circle. There's some lawsuits that are out there. Ian, maybe you and I can kick that around a little bit. Like, you know, she is promising UNLV and Nevada and her other members a portion of the proceeds from the Pac-12's poaching penalties and exit fees from the schools that are already said they're leaving. You know, all those schools are suing, or the Pac-12 is suing to get out of the poaching fees. If that pot of money shrinks down, she's got less to, you know, to share with UNLV. And I've seen the memo of understanding that the schools signed. You know, if she can't deliver enough money, that's not a binding agreement. And so I think she's saying, yes, we have an agreement. I feel good about the litigation. Meanwhile, everybody's attacking that pot of money. And I think it's going to be a really interesting few months here.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think it should not, like everything else in college athletics, should not have got to this point. By the way, anytime that you're a conference commissioner and someone you know, whether it's John Canzano or anybody else mentions you in the same breath with George Kliavkov, that just can't be a good thing.
No.
As you just did, like that can't be good for your career, or who and what you are. But yeah, I think with her, it's what they're trying to do, it's self-preservation. That's all it is. And we shouldn't be here in the first place, because there is a taint and a feeling that Oregon State and Washington State obviously have about, you know, Oregon, about the Mountain West, and not wanting to, quote, be a part of the Mountain West. Like, I understand that. I also don't quite, you know, we should have got back that pass a while ago. They should have just kind of come to terms and figure out a way to just combine the conferences and call it the Pac-12, and away you go. And really, the dumb thing about the Mountain West, it's not like you're a historically significant conference. You were built out of the, you know, with the breakaway eight, in with the WAC in 1999. Most of those schools aren't even there anymore. So I'm not sure what you're doing in the first place, but here we are. And I think the one thing we've learned all along, and you and Wilner have done a great job of reporting about all this stuff, is that nothing is forever, and nothing is set in stone. And who knows where we're going to go down the road, because it could all change. It could all blow up. It could all be different by the time we even get to July or June of 2026. But I think if you're the Pac-12, and I think this is something that, you know, that's why I wanted to touch base with you even today, was I think if you're Oregon State, Washington State, and the other schools in the Pac-12, you should just be all over UNLV and all over Nevada. Just take that state. Like, I don't understand what the holdup was in the first place. And from their standpoint, be a part of what the Pac-12 is going to be. First of all, it will be a top five basketball conference in the country. And if St. Mary's wants in, then bring them in, right? Like, if St. Mary's is really kind of wanting to come in, you get them in. Gonzaga and St. Mary's for basketball and other, and the you know, the Olympic, so-called Olympic sports, non-revenue sports. And then that's a top five basketball conference. It raises the level of basketball play. And then football-wise, you have your, you know, whoever else you're going to bring in. If that puts you, what, 9 members? Maybe you bring Memphis in, you're at 10. That's a pretty good conference, you know, especially with the ACC kind of taking a step back. Big 12 isn't what it used to be in football. I just feel like those are no-brainers. And I'm confident it might happen, but I'm not sure what the delay is outside of the media rights negotiations.
Ian Furness, KJR Radio in Seattle with us. Pivoting to Washington State, we had Jimmy Rogers on the show yesterday. You've had him in studio with you. What do you think of that hire by Ann McCoy?
I like him. John, he is, as you well know from talking to him, he is so massively different than any coach we have had in Pullman in decades, at a high level, except for one, and I'll get to that one guy in a second. But, you know, football has always had the eccentric guy, Jim Walden, Dennis Erickson, Mike Price, and Dennis was eccentric only in that he was kind of ahead of his time in terms of his offense, but Dennis was a little off. I mean, hell, we all know Dennis, Hurricane Dennis does this thing. And, you know, then Mike Price, certainly Mike Leach, and, to you know, Dickert was kind of a salesman, but this guy is as serious as the day is long. He is, I mean, I was really kind of, I don't want to say surprised by him, but I was, he's a guy that really kind of comes across as being in charge, on top of things. I liked him a lot. I really, honestly, John, I liked the demeanor. I liked the no-nonsense. There's not a lot of sales pitch or BS going on. This guy just does his thing, man, and I like it. And I'll tell you who he reminded me of, and I think you'll in a certain way, when Tony Bennett first took over at Wazoo as the basketball coach, you know, Tony, you know, I think people see Tony at Virginia, you know, before he took off, you know, he'd smile and, you know, this. Tony was, I mean, I would just call him a basketball nerd. That's what he was. And he didn't have a lot of social skills. Wasn't like the guy that you're going to go out there and, you know, he's not going to rah-rah you to death in terms of getting money for you and all those things. But Tony could coach, and Tony knew he could coach, and he knew he could build a program. And he got more comfortable in his own skin and who he was later on. And I'm not saying Jimmy Rogers isn't comfortable, but I see a little bit of Jimmy Rogers, or Tony Bennett and Jimmy Rogers. And the other guy, John, that I really, man, I felt like it was almost like talking to the college version of this guy. He's got Mike McDonald in him, too. When I sat with Mike McDonald last year when he got hired by the Seahawks, I'm like, damn, we just went from Pete Carroll and all the Pete Carrollisms that he would have out there and all the things, you know, Pete, rah, rah, here we go, you know, and I mean, all the things that we used to kind of joke about to this guy who was just like, same thing, serious as the day is long, uber focused, you know, new school in a lot of different ways. And, you know, Mike loosened up during the football season. He loosened up quite a bit, but that's kind of the other guy I kind of the impression of. And Pullman doesn't need a salesman right now. They had a salesman. They had a guy that was, you know, giving you the pyramid scheme, and then he left town, and Jake Dickert. They don't need that now. They need this. I think they need this type of dude.
Ian Furness, KJR in Seattle. You had an up-close look at Pete Carroll for all those years with the Seahawks, and now he's in Vegas, you know, energized and doing his thing. Marshawn Lynch showing up to the news conference. Does Pete Carroll, does it work this time around?
I don't have a reason to believe it won't. That's the way I'd answer that. Man, 2010, he rolled into town, and all of us are like, yeah, okay. Like, this guy, like, this isn't USC, man. We're not sitting down there, and we're not hanging out with movie stars. This is Seattle. This is the NFL. This stuff isn't going to work. Hey, wow, listen, the music's really loud playing at practice right now. I mean, all the things the first, John, that first few months with him, it was wild, like just the whole, and I, you know, we're coming off the Mike Holmgren era, and then the one, you know, horrible year with Jim Mora, but, you know, we were used to Mike Holmgren, and like Mike Holmgren, man, you were afraid on the sideline to laugh as a media member, a joke, because Mike come over and say something to you. Pete's coming in, it's just rah-rah, he's got his throwing gloves on, he's chucking the ball around. The first, you know, back then from 2010 until, I didn't do it this year because I'm doing the Kraken, but for what, 15 years, every year that Pete Carroll was in Seattle, I covered him for the TV station for Fox 13, and I'll never forget this. We go down to New Orleans his first year. His first year, New Orleans. And we go to the team hotel. We're checking in, my cameraman and myself, and we're getting ready to go, and we come back down to go to dinner, down to the quarter, and it's like this like circus in the hotel lobby. And NFL lobbies are usually like, there's family members and stuff. There's autograph seekers, and they kind of keep them off to the side. Like, what the hell's going on down here? And Will Ferrell was there with Pete in the hotel lobby. And they're, you know, and it's like, you know, players are like, hey, can we, you know, and Pete was just going to dinner with Will Ferrell like it was nothing. That's just what he did. And, you know, we always had celebrities at practice and stuff, and it worked for a long time. And then when it did, it was because it just was time for a change. And in all sports, it doesn't matter how good a coach you are, it's time for a change. I think he's going to go down there. He adds legitimacy, credibility. It's an organization that's badly in need of it. The Raiders are probably the perfect team for him in a lot of reasons, you know, because of that. The fact Brady's involved is probably good. Maybe it balances out crazy Mark Davis. But, yeah, I have no reason to believe it won't, man. I doubted him once before, and that was foolish on all of our parts. And I wasn't the only one up here. But we all doubted him one time before. I don't doubt him this time, man. I think unless he makes Marshawn his offensive coordinator, I think he'll be fine.
Give me an idea, because you've worked in Portland, you've worked in Seattle, and, you know, the Jody Allen, Burt Cold thing in Portland, people cannot stand what has happened to the Blazers. But I go to Seattle and I say, man, it's a shame what Jody Allen and Burt Cold has done, and the Seahawk fan doesn't quite see it the same way. Like, they might, you know, go, oh, we miss Paul, but they're not as angry at Jody. What is going on between the Seattle and the Portland sort of, you know, the makeup of the fan base and the view of Jody Allen?
Well, listen, you're the wordsmith, and I think this is a book you have to write, honestly. I kind of joke about that, because the difference between not just the perception, but just kind of how the organizations are run in the two cities is, it's stark. It's a stark contrast to what, I mean, I think, like, and for people to know, like, you and I got to Portland the same year, right? We both got there in 2002, I think, right?
Yep.
2002,
yeah.
We both got to Portland, you know, and we rolled in. I'm coming into sports radio. I'm coming out of Salt Lake. I've covered the Jazz and the NBA for a long time. You come in there, and we're going to the same locker room, dealing with just the massive dysfunction that team was in 02, 03 with,
yep.
I mean, it was just every day was something new with Rasheed and Bonzi and the crew. But you know, what was wild is that, you know, Paul was there every night, right? You and I would see him. You and I didn't miss a game. We were at every game. Yep. We're sitting there watching. He's there every night on the baseline. They, you know, the entourage comes in. Who's he with? And then they leave. But he was so hands-on and so into the Blazers. And I think most Blazer fans thought he was a pretty good owner, right? Because he'd go spend in the luxury tax, maybe which it would make the best decisions. You know, when they fired Bob, they made some bad ones. John Nash was a bad hire. Our buddy, Miss Patterson, was a really bad hire. so they made bad hires along the way. but it was never because they didn't care. You know, Paul cared so deeply about the Blazers. I mean, to the point where, remember we were there and we couldn't watch the workout until the very end, but remember when they were working guys out and Paul was just enamored with Martell Webster.
Yes.
Right? Seattle guy and all that. And he's shooting lights out in the gym in Tualatin and all that. And they draft. I mean, Paul was hands-on, was all in, and all he wanted to do was win an NBA title. That's all he wanted. And I don't think you can ever fault an owner for that. And the fact that he spent into the luxury tax every year tells you that. Hell, he went out and took Nate McMillan from the Seattle Supersonics. And I know Nate was a good coach. I mean, he has ups and downs, but, like, that's what he did. When Paul passed away, and I'll tell you, the Seahawk-wise, not too far, but Seahawk-wise, I just have Mike Holmgren in studio. He joins me in studio every Wednesday, and we talk about Paul all the time, and he's like, I've never worked for a better owner. Like Paul Allen, but Paul Allen just, he goes, he let me do my thing, gave us whatever we needed resource-wise and away you go, and he says, you know, Jody's kind of the same way. The dynamic has changed, and actually it did change if we remember. Burt Cold's the one that hired John Nash. Remember that? Because that's when Paul was sick. The first time. And remember John Nash get introduced by Burt Cole, and everybody's like, who the hell is this dude? Like, what, who the hell is this guy? I mean, you and I probably talked about that, Dad, and this guy, like, who the hell, Burt Cole? But Burt's not a basketball guy. Jody's not a basketball fan. And so they own this basketball team, and they really aren't invested in it emotionally. Outside of, you know, Burt's the kind of guy that thinks that, you know, he can go out and make hires, and he's a smart guy and all that. He's not. He was Paul's roommate. He lucked out. He lucked in the draw when he got roomed with them, that Paul. But they don't really care. They don't have a passion for it. They care about the Seahawks deeply. Jody is a huge Seahawks fan. Like she's the definition of a 12. And so because of that, the Seahawks are kind of their thing. And up here, I don't think anybody has a strong feeling one way or the other because you don't ever hear from them or talk to them or anything like that. The president, Chuck Arnold, on the business side and John Schneider are kind of the faces and the coach face of the organization. So it's just a different dynamic. I think they just don't care about basketball, and it's just a different vibe. They need to sell the team, the Blazers, to somebody that cares about the team because it's just not fair to the fans of Portland what they're doing right now.
Ian Furness, KJR in Seattle. Ian, I got about 2 minutes, but the Kraken, you know, you've been involved with that organization, I think, since the inception, and there's nobody better reporting on it. Are they still a hit with the Seattle fans? Has any of that worn off?
No, it hasn't. But and actually, I've been covering them. This is the first year I'm working for them for the first year this year. So that's a whole different dynamic, especially if you can relate to this, working for a team, which I've never done before on the TV side. And I'll just say this from that. I can speak in that sense. We love being on the air in Portland on TV. And I feel that. It's awesome. We get to talk all the time. I try to make a point of always bringing it up. When I see a former Portland Winterhawk on the ice, whether it's Oliver Bjorkstrand who plays for Seattle or a guy that plays for the other team, I know Portland fans appreciate that. It's awesome. Great hockey fans down there, so it's cool. Up here it's different. They still sell every game. Every game sold out. This is the first year. This is year four. It's the first year that some of those first-year ticket plans, they had three-year ticket contract, ran out, and yet the building is still full, which is remarkable. They're not very good, need to get better. They've got some issues. They just sent down their $6 million goalie to the minors today, and Philip Grubauer. So they've got a lot of work to do roster-wise. They fired a coach last year. His extension was kicking in this year, which also tells you they don't care about money. They'll spend. They're great owners. Sam Holloway, who's a daughter of David Bonnerman, just passed away. He's was a minority owner of the Celtics, and I guess she is now until they sell him. They're going to own the NBA team as well in a couple years. Great ownership. Fans are great. place is rocking. If you haven't been up here, it's you got to come up Canzano and cover a game or just be sitting up. It's wild. They put on an incredible show, and the team just has underperformed this year. The reality is pro sports. They should be better. They're not. They need to get better. They will make massive changes in the offseason because we're just talking about, it feels like the Blazers, you can tell me, feels like the Blazers are kind of stuck in quicksand.
Yes.
Right? They're just not going anywhere. Yeah. The Kraken, they kind of are in terms of look at the standings. They're similar, but they won't mess around. They'll fire people. They'll cut players. They'll trade for guys. They'll spend money. Todd Leitwicke runs the Kraken, and he is uber aggressive. Like, just does not care. Like, he'll go, we will win. We will put a better product on the ice next year. And that's how they operate, which is awesome. But the games themselves and the production and the fans are great. They're booing the power play last night because it was bad. And they should boo it, right? Like, we have knowledgeable hockey fans in the Northwest. Portland, Seattle, Tri, Spokane, et cetera. It's been good so far. It's been a massive hit so far.
Ian Furness, you're the best. You know, people want to be mad at me for being on radio. Blame Ian. He gave me my first shot. And love having you on. Love talking with you, man. I appreciate you.
But hey, anytime, John. Same thing. I love the bald-faced truth. Keep up the website. Great stuff. Keep up the good work. We'll talk soon.
All right. There he goes from Seattle, Ian Furness. Blake, I love that explanation of Jody as a fan of the 12s, and she's one of them. And it's as simple as that, isn't it? If you're looking at a problem with the product in Portland as it pertains to the Blazers versus Seattle, because I do get in this debate with my friends who are Seahawks fans, and they're like, you know, I'm bellyaching about Jody needing to sell the Blazers, and they're going, she's not so bad with the Seahawks. And I think Ian hits right on it. Like, she's one of them. That's she's wearing the gear. She's rooting. People see how passionate she is. You will look at her at a Blazer game, she looks out of place. She's not wearing the right jacket. She's barely paying attention. You know she doesn't love it. You know that she's going, hey, of these two things, this isn't even close. I think it's a great way to frame the Jody Allen trusteeship as it pertains to the Blazers and the Seahawks. Our big splash coming up, it has to do with an award and an investigation. I'll tell you more about it after the break.